Okay, so today's daf Lamed Hey in Zevachim. We're going to start on Lamed Dalit Amud Bet. Five lines up from the bottom where it says, Gufat Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kos Echad, Ayam Mimalei Midam Atarovet, She'im Yishapech Chad Mehem, Nimtza Shu Machshiro. So what did Rabbi Yehuda say? He said like this, on the day of Korban Pesach, 14th of Nisan, what they would do was at the end of offering all of the korbanot, which was a lot, because everybody came to bring their korban pesach, they would take one cup, scoop up some of the dam from the ground, and put it on the mizbeach, thinking to themselves, okay, if anyone's, because they were moving so fast, you know, doing all the avodah, so in order to make sure that the dam made it to the mizbeach, they would like scoop up what was on the ground and throw it on there and say, okay, so if there was anybody who their whole korban spilled, now it made it to the mizbeach, make sure that everyone was fulfilled their mitzvah. Amul of the Rabbi Yehuda said to Rabbi Yehuda, but wait a second, doesn't the blood have to be received in a vessel? We learned that before. There has to be kabbalat adam, so how can you scoop it off the floor, right? And so the Gemara interjects into the Braita and says, minayad e. How do they know that the blood wasn't received in a vessel? Maybe it was received in a vessel and it spilled on the floor. That seems to be like what Rabbi Yehuda is assuming. Ela shema lo nitkabel bichli. What they meant was maybe some of this blood that's on the ground never was received in a vessel. It fell right on the ground and then it's pasul. So why are you throwing it on the mizbeach? Amar lehen, he said to them, af ani lo amarti ela kshnitkabel bichli. I'm only talking about where it fell on the ground. I mean, I'm sorry, it was caught in a vessel before it fell on the ground. That's what I meant. V'ugufei minayada. How does he come to assume that it was caught before it fell on the ground? Because Kohanim zuizin. Because Kohanim are very careful about what they do. V'avdin haya u'mishtapchin. But they're working very quickly, so they might have spilled it. In other words, because they're moving so fast, we know they're not going to let the blood spill on the ground. Of course they're going to catch it, but maybe they're running around so much, somebody bumped into someone, fell on the ground. It happened. You're walking with your cup of coffee, you know, boom, so somebody bumps into you. With all those kohanim running around, someone bumps into you, that's all it takes, it's all over the ground, right? So it was caught in a kli, but then it ended up on the ground, and then the next korban was going, and this and that, and didn't have a time to pick up what fell, And so that could happen. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says they should pick it up. But what about the dama tamtzit? Dama tamtzit means the blood that comes after the initial blood. Not the initial blood that comes out in the shechita, but other blood that comes out afterwards. There's going to be all kinds of blood that comes out of the of these korbanot onto the ground, even after what's caught. In other words, they catch certain blood that's the initial dama nefesh. And then there's other blood that comes out also, and that's going to be mixed in. How can you have a mix of blood that's supposed to go on the mizbeach, which is dama nefesh, and dama that's not supposed to go on the mizbeach, and mix those together and throw it on the mizbeach? That seems like a very non-kosher thing to do. Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, because he considers even the blood that comes after the initial life blood is also called dam. It's also called blood, and therefore, as it says in the Baita, dam tamtzit ba'zara, Rabbi Yehuda omer b'charet, that even though the chachamim in general treat dam tamtzit, the blood that comes afterwards, that oozes out after the initial life of the animal has expired, according to chachamim, that's ba'azara, that's only a lav, it's a negative commandment to eat that blood, but it's not karet. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, that also is under the isur karet. In other words, there's no difference between the blood that comes out at the initial time when the life of the animal is expiring, and the blood that comes out afterwards. And therefore, the fact that there's both types of blood are on the ground doesn't invalidate the blood that goes on the Mizbeach. But then the Gemara asks, Va'amar Rabbi Elazar Moder Rabbi Yehuda L'inyan Kapar Shein Mechaper. But didn't we learn that even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that that kind of blood that is not the Dama Nefesh, the kind of blood that flows afterwards is not considered to be blood for the Mizbeach. It's not considered to be blood for the purposes of Kapara. And so the Shine'emar, as we learn in the Pasuk, and here we have a bunch of different notes and things here, it should say, Ki Adamu Benefesh Yechaper, that the blood, Benefesh, it's the soul blood of the animal that brings the kapara, dam shenefesh yotzabo kawoidam, shena nefesh yotzabo in kawoidam, that with respect to the mizbeach, everybody agrees that only the blood of the nefesh, the lifeblood of the animal, counts as blood. For other purposes, Rabbi Yehuda might say that all blood is equal, but for this purpose, even he agrees you're only supposed to put the lifeblood. So how can you scoop up off of the ground the mixture of lifeblood and regular blood and throw it on the mizbeach? So he answers, okay, you're right. The reason why is because he holds En dam mevatel dam, which is a general principle that Rabbi Yehuda holds throughout the Shas, which is min bimino eno batel. We saw this before earlier in other contexts in the Gemara, and we're going to see a lot of it in Masechet Chulin when we get there, that min bimino eno mevatel, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you combine two things that are exactly the same. For instance, if you take meat that is glat kosher lemahadrin, that you bought it ever fresh with all the stamps on it and you're cooking it in your pot, and even a tiny bit of nevela meat, it's also beef, falls in, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even if it's less than 1/60th, even if it's 1/1000th, it doesn't matter. Min bimino eno batel. Since they are exactly the same physically, there's no bitul. Only different things can create bitul, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Yeah, meaning it will become totally non-kosher, according to Rabbi Yehuda only, not according to the other chachamim. Everybody else says no. Whether it's min bimino is batel according to the Torah in the majority, and according to the rabbis in shishim, you need 60 times. Min b'she'eno mino, if it's different, it's benoten ta'am. You have to negate the flavor. That's why we use 1/60th to negate the flavor. Rabbi Yehuda though holds that min bimino, you're just adding to it. You're not actually. How can you say, like, if you have a pot of meat, and it's beef, and then non-kosher beef goes in, so Rabbi Yehuda says all you did was add to it. It can't be batel, because meaning you're adding non-kosher in. So how can you say that non-kosher is batel? How is it batel? It just becomes part of the kosher, because it's not distinguishable. Not distinguishable, right? So that's what Rabbi Yehuda holds. Actually, Rashi holds like Rabbi Yehuda, but nobody else nobody accepted that lahalacha. That's why we don't follow it. But that's what Rabbi Yehuda's view. So therefore, if you mix blood that is lifeblood with blood that is the non-lifeblood, the dama tamtzit on the ground, it all becomes one entity, according to Rabbi Yehuda. There's no way to say that. There's no bitul. It doesn't nullify. Huh?
Even on Pesach, Rabbi Yehuda holds?
Rabbi Yehuda, well, we all say b'mashu on Pesach. The tiny amount always becomes...
But Rabbi Yehuda said it doesn't matter.
What do you mean?
I thought.
It doesn't matter for stringency, though. Meaning there's no way to do bitul, so it's worse. It's worse. Because even if a tiny amount of non-kosher food falls in, it's gonna make the whole thing no good. In other words, the rule of Pesach of Chametz applies all the time, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to everything when it's the same thing. When it's meat going into meat, let's say.
How come he's not adding bitul here?
So he's saying...
He should say, you know what, now even the original dam that's put on the other, now it can't go because it got mixed with the thing.
Right, so he could have flipped it the other way. He could have flipped it the other way. He could have flipped it the other way. But I guess the point is that his concept is that the two things are coexisting there. One doesn't take away from the other one. Right, it doesn't affect the other one. They both exist, so you're definitely putting on the dam hanefesh. Okay, you're also putting on some other blood on there. That doesn't take away from it. He said the point is that it won't take away from it. Even if you assume that the majority sitting there is probably the dama tamtzit, not the dama nefesh. Maybe a little bit was the dama nefesh that spilled. Okay, still, it's still there for Rabbi Yehuda. Even if it's a small amount, it's still going to be there. That's how he's looking at it, because he's assuming that the majority is non-nefesh blood anyway, and only a small amount would be nefesh blood. So you'll say, well, why are you throwing the majority is inappropriate blood? He says, no, because there's still an amount in there that is good, that is supposed to be for the mizbeach, and that small amount doesn't become nullified. So that's why he's assuming it that way. Now the Gemara says, then he gives another argument. He says to them, Rabbi Yehuda said to them, "Ledivrechem lama pokekina azara." Why did they close up the azara? What they used to do was they would close up the drainage so that the blood actually like accumulated in the azara, in the courtyard on Erev Pesach. He said, why did they do that? Isn't it because of what I'm saying? Because they wanted to take a scoop of it and put it on the... And put it on the Mizbeach. They said to him, no, the reason is, Amulo shevachu levnei Aaron, shehalechu ad arkevotehen badam. No, it's actually the reason is because it's a praise to Bnei Aaron, to the Kohanim, that they walk up to their knees in the blood. Right? In other words, that they're walking around in blood. That's considered to be, to show that they're so devoted that they will walk around in the blood, even with the blood all over them. They don't care. They're doing the avodah. So then the Gemara asks, "Ve'adam havechatzitza? Isn't blood an interruption between the feet of the Kohanim and the floor? They're not supposed to have anything in between their feet and the floor of the Beit HaMikdash?" The Gemara answers, "Lachu, no, because it's liquid. Ve'lo havechatzitza. It's not considered chatzitza. It's not as we learned in the Mishnah. Adam, blood, vadio, ink, vadvash, and honey, vachalav." And milk, yevishin chotzitzin. If they're dried and crusty, then it's a chatzitza. It will be an interruption between the feet of the kohanim and the floor, or for mikveh or any other purpose. But lachin en chotzitzin, when it's a liquid, it's not going to make a chatzitza. It's okay.
Why only those specific four things?
I guess it's giving an example of liquidy things that harden sometimes.
But
sometimes
we
hard. Yeah, it would be the same. If it's liquid, it's liquid, and if it hardens, it's going to be a problem. It's just giving examples.
So there's blood.
That's what it says. That's what gives blood as an example. So it's saying on the floor, since when they come into the Azara, what they have is they have blood on the floor. It's not a problem for the Kohanim to walk on the blood because the blood is liquid. If the blood hardened on the floor, became coagulated, hardened, so then it would be considered an interruption between their feet and the floor. Then the Gemara asks, but v'ha'ka mitvase manayu, how can they get their clothes all dirty? They're all wearing these fancy big day kehuna. They're going to walk around and get blood all over them. How could it be? Utnan ayu begadav mitush tashin va'avad avodato pesula. We learned that if the Kohen's garments are dirty and soiled, right? We learned earlier in the second perek, in the Braita, if the garments are soiled and dirty, then it's the avodato pesula. His avodah is going to be invalid. So how can they walk around with bloody, dirty garments? It's not acceptable. It's not lechavor ul'tifaret. It says in the Torah it's supposed to be beautiful. How could it be? So the Gemara answers, v'chite man, if you're going to tell me, dimadlu lehu, that they pull up, you know, like, if you're going into a messy place, you could pull up the pant legs, pull up the bottom of the tunic so it doesn't touch the blood. Maybe you're going to tell me that, but we already learned earlier also, v'atanya, mido, it says, midovad kemidato, shelo yechsar velo yotir. It can't be too long or too short, meaning he can't pull it up, he has to leave it. So it's going to get blood all over it, and it's going to be bigadim mitush tashim, dirty clothes, meluch lechim. So it says, the answer must be, bolachat evarim lekevesh, telav avodahi. We're talking about during bringing the limbs to the mizbeach, up to the ramp, which is not considered a core part of the avodah. It's not. We're not talking about bringing the blood to the mizbeach, because that's part of the avodah. It's saying bringing the evarim, bringing the limbs, so the altar, that was when they were walking with this blood on them. And that's why that's what they were talking about when they said they're going to walk with that, because it's not really part of the avodah. So it's okay if their bigadim get dirty. It's okay. None of these things are a problem because they're not really, it's not part of the avodah. Then the Gemara asks, but wait a second. Ve'atan velo, right? Is that really true? Ve'atanya, v'kriva kohen et hakol, zo lacha devarim lekevesh. It says, v'kriva kohen et hakol, it's considered part of the avodah to bring the limbs up to the mizbeach. It's not one of the core avodot that determines whether the korban is accepted or not, because we know that once the blood is thrown, the korban is accepted. But it is considered avodah. Non kohen cannot do that, and so therefore, how can they walk around in the blood, getting the blood all over them? They could think, "I'm going to take it to the cleaners afterwards. I don't know what they're going to do with it." But they why don't they have to worry about it? So it says it must be talking about ela beolachat itzim lemaracha. It's talking about when they brought the wood onto the pyre, onto the top of the mizbeach. The lav avodai, it's not considered an avodah. Okay? And so therefore, they were allowed to walk in the blood and get themselves dirty because it wasn't considered part of the avodah during that time. And then later, they would clean their garments before they did another part of the avodah. And that's why it says it's a great shevach, that they didn't care that they were walking in the blood to do the avodah. So then the Gemara asks, but wait a second, vila avodah yichyazli, but then how did they conduct the rest of the service? If there's blood all over the ground. You told me, okay, there's a certain part of the service that the Chachamim are saying that they dafka specifically walked in the blood and they didn't care. Fine, very nice. But what about the part of the avodah that they're not allowed to do that, where they have to have their garments clean and all that? What about that? He answers, no, because the azle aitztaba. They had a certain track. They had a certain platform that they would walk on during that time, so they didn't get dirty. Now they explained, the Mefarshim explained, that it was made of stone, and it wasn't, if it were made of something other than the floor, you can't have anything in between yourself and the floor. So it was made out of the same material, the floor. It was considered an extent, like an elevated part of the floor. There was an elevated part of the floor, you could put it that way. It wasn't a separate ramp that they put in, like a stool. What? It
says raised stone.
Yeah, a raised stone area that they would walk on to be above the blood when they were doing the avodah. But at a certain point, they would even walk in the blood to show that it doesn't bother us that we're doing it, we're doing whatever we do. We don't think about our own personal feelings. We're so devoted to the avodah, we walk in the blood. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the purpose of gathering all the blood was to be able to throw a big bucket of it onto the Mizbeach to make sure everyone's blood made it there. According to Chachamim, the reason is no, that they walked in it for part of the for one of the non-essential parts of the service in order to say that it doesn't bother us that we're walking in blood, we're willing to give up our aesthetic preferences for the sake of doing the Avodah. So now we come to the next Mishnah.
No matter what, the Kohen's clothing...
Yeah, he's going to have to take it to the cleaners afterwards, I guess.
But every time he does Shechita, it gets there.
Well, I guess they managed to stand in a way that they didn't get it on their clothes when they did it. They were really good at it. I've seen Rabbi Ben Chaim do Shechita and step out of the way.
Rabbi Ben Chaim Shechita, not only himself gets full of blood.
No, he splatters it on the person next to him. Yeah, he splatters it on the person next to him. Yeah, but they had another Kohen who was putting the thing for Kabbalah. So hopefully it won't get all over you at that point if you're able to catch most of it.
Yeah. Blood is liquid. They can hold it out, right?
Yeah, well, they did. They had a special channel called the Amma. That was what that would let it go out. But the point was on Pesach, they closed it and let the place fill up.
That's crazy.
That's why it was so weird. That's why they're asking, why did they do that? So Rabbi Yehuda says they did it because they wanted to make sure that all the blood got to the Mizbeach. According to the Chachamim, no, it was to show that the Kohanim are so devoted. Anyway, the Mishnah says, HaShochet et HaZevach lechol devar shein darko lechol laktir, devar shein darko laktir. Kasher. Now we've seen this before. We've actually seen this quoted and debated already before. This is the original source. If when they do the Shechita, now we're talking about Pigulia. If when they do the Shechita, he has in mind to eat something at the wrong time or in the wrong place. So we know that makes it Pigul if it's wrong time, Pasul if it's wrong place. Now what if he's thinking about eating a part of it that's not normally eaten? That was what we saw. We discussed this before. Or to burn part of it that's not normally burnt. For example, he imagines eating the kidneys or something, which goes on the Mizbeach. Or he imagines burning the meat that normally is supposed to be eaten, right? So it says kasher. That machshava is insignificant because it's about an object. It's about doing something you're not supposed to do anyway, right? So you're saying I'm going to eat the kidneys tomorrow. Well, you're not supposed to eat that anyway at any time, so it's not pigul. However, Rabbi Eliezer says no. Right? That in that case. He says, no, even though what you are thinking is an activity that you're not supposed to do, still he says that it becomes pasul, right? There's a discussion about whether it means just pasul or he means also pigul. That's a good question, whether he would consider it, whether he means pasul or pigul. The Gemara talks about
pigul. What? Wrong time with the pigul.
Right. So the question is, when you think about part of it that you're not supposed to eat anyway, is that going to make it pigul or is it just going to make it pasul? That's one of the questions.
He says pasul. Even on the same day.
No, it's talking about pigul thoughts.
Right.
That's what it's talking about, pigul thought. Right. Yeah, it's talking about a pigul thought, but a pigul thought that is about part of it that you don't normally eat anyway.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So now the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, lechol davar shedakol lechol laktir davar shedakol laktir pachot mikazayit kasher. Even if you thought about eating the meat, or you thought about only eating less than a kazayit, I just want to taste a little bit of it tomorrow. I'm going to put one scrap of it for tomorrow. That will not make it pigul because it's too little of an amount. Lechol kachatzi zayit ulaktir kachatzi zayit kasher. We saw this already. Again, that if you say I'm going to take one kazayit of this meat tomorrow, one kazayit of this animal tomorrow. Half of it will be edible part. I'm going to eat that. Half of it is a part that you're supposed to burn. I'm going to put that on a mizbeach tomorrow. So he's doing only half of each. We said again, in that case, kasher, she'en achila baktam etzarfin. We don't combine the two things. It has to be a full kezayit of eating at the wrong time or a full kezayit of burning at the wrong time in order to be pigul. Okay, yeah, we discussed these halachot already. Hashochet et hazevach. We didn't discuss this yet. Let's say the person does the zevach lechol kezayit mina. Oh, let's say he says, I know that I'm not allowed to wait till tomorrow to eat the meat. But tomorrow, what I'm going to do is I'm going to eat some of the skin. Talking about skin of an animal, you don't usually eat that, but okay. Or he says, min rotev, from the rotev means that when they would cook it, the broth, you know, that comes out of the meat. I'm going to eat that. Or min kippah. The kippah doesn't mean the kippah that you wear on your head, that's with the kaf. Right? It means kippah is talking about the spices and stuff like that. Let's say you made a soup, they boiled the meat and they ate it and they had like a little bit of a juice left over. Abgush, right? Abgush, like the abgush. Yeah. Abgush. So they have that left or the kefir. So they have this, they have the umin alal, or they said, I'm going to eat the alal. The alal is the neck bone of the animal that's not usually eaten. Uminatzamot, or I'm going to eat some of the bones. Uminagidin, I'm going to eat some of the sinews. Uminakanai, uminatlafayim, you're going to eat the horns, you're going to eat the hooves, okay? Any of these things a normal person doesn't eat. So you're thinking, if you said to yourself, tomorrow I'm going to eat from the korban some of the meat after the deadline, for sure that's pigul. But you're saying, I'm going to eat the horns of the animal tomorrow. Nobody eats the horns of the animal.
What do you do with the horns, anyway?
I don't know. Eat them. Oh,
they don't burn it?
No, it's part of the head.
Like a bone.
Yeah. So it's like a bone, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, some of the korbanot, the head, the head usually goes on the mizbeach.
The
head, but I guess it's not. But it's not really part of what has to be. Not for all the korbanot, I don't think. Yeah. But it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be burnt, because then it wouldn't be that wouldn't be a thing that's. It wouldn't even be a discussion, because that would be something that's supposed to be burnt.
But the skin goes to Kohanim anyway, doesn't it?
Of certain korbanot, of the korban olah, yeah. Oh. Korban olah, let's say the shlamim. I don't know what korban is talking about. Could be talking about many. Right? So in the case of an ora olah, goes to the kohen. That's true. In some cases, they put the head, like let's say goat olah, the head goes on. We're just going to talk about that soon. In some cases, only the emurin go on, and the entire body of the animal is yours. Let's say korban shlamim. So if the entire body of the animal is yours, you could eat the head, you could eat the karnaim if you want to. I don't know what you would do, how you would eat the. It would be weird. Actually, there's some people that they eat the hooves of animals, don't they? They like boil it, they eat it, no?
Pache.
Right, they eat it. So I guess that would be, yeah. So anyway, so in that case, it says, chutz zman chutz mkomo kasher. So in the outside of its time or outside of its place, kasher. In other words, these are not things that are normally eaten. So even though somebody might decide to eat them, if you had in mind to eat any of these things, either they're not normally eaten or they're not considered part of the korban meat itself. For example, in the case of the spices that were cooked with it, or the broth is normally eaten, but it's not really part of the korban. It's just something that absorbed flavor from the korban. So that, again, is not considered like saying you're going to eat from the korban the next day, because you're either referring to a part of it that's not normally eaten, like bones and things like that, sinews, or you're referring to something that's not really part of the korban, but absorbed flavor from the korban. There's a whole discussion about, wait a second, what about, we say tam ki ikar, and normally we say that if something absorbs flavor, it's like the thing itself, so why shouldn't the broth be, broth come under the rule of not eating from the korban? But that's a whole other discussion. So it says, ve'en chayavin aleihen bishum pigul ve'notar b'tamei, and there's no liability for pigul, or for leaving over to the next day, or for tum'ah. If a tameh person would eat from any of these parts of the korban, they wouldn't be liable, because they're not considered to be eating from the korban, either because it's only a derivative of the korban, like in the case of the broth, or because it's not considered part of the meat of the korban at all.
So okay, how do they collect this? After the burning?
You get your shlamim. They just give it to you. Here's your shlamim. Did the shechita, they put the blood, they put the emurin on, the part inside, and they say, here's your korban, take it home.
And then
you have to take it apart, and you have to cook it, and...
Today.
Right, now if you decide, you say we're going to have pache, what's it called? Pache? We're going to have it tomorrow. So for shlamim, you get 2 days. Let's say you said 3 days, we're going to have it. Right? It doesn't sound very appealing to me.
But the person who's bringing, isn't the the person who's shechting
has to have this kavanah, right? So the kohen is thinking it's going to be eaten on that day, right? Or you could have done the shechita yourself. Bam. But yeah, it would be weird. Why is the Kohen thinking about what you're going to do with it?
Exactly.
Yeah, but it is weird, because the Kohen shouldn't be thinking about what you're going to do with it, but let's say he did.
How can he think of
what you're going to do, right? Maybe he's thinking that maybe it's you yourself doing the Korban. I mean, that's in that case where the owner's eating the Korban, it's easier to imagine a pigul thought,
right, exactly.
That the person did their own shechita, because you're allowed to do your own shechita. Maybe you did. So in a case of a chatat or something where the kohen is eating it, it's easier to imagine that the kohen had the thought about his own eating, because why would he think about your eating? Why does he think about what you're going to do?
It is right.
So let's say the person would come and do their own shechita, because they're allowed to do their own shechita, so that would work. Now, in any case, the point is, though, the point is the same. Whoever's having the pigul thought, it doesn't apply to parts of the animal that are not eaten normally, and it also doesn't apply to something which is a derivative and isn't like the abgush is not, wouldn't come. Now, so it says, let's say, hashochet tamuktashin lechol shelil. He decides he's going to eat the shlil. The shlil is the embryo inside the animal. Or the shilya is the placenta around the, you know, the, where the animal, the baby lives inside. Okay? Inside, the sac that it lives inside. Right? Okay, bachutz. Right? Oh, lo pigil. That's not considered pigul because what he's thinking about doing is, it's not really the animal itself, but it's something inside the animal. It's the shilya, it's the shilil, it's something else. Okay? Hamoleket atoin lechol betzein bachutz. If it's, he does malika, right? That's when how they kill bird korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash by breaking the neck in the back with the thumb. So if they do that, lechol betzein bachutz, and he knows that this particular bird has inside it some eggs that it didn't lay yet. So he says, I'm going to eat the eggs outside. Lo pigel, that's not pigul, because he didn't think about the korban itself. He thought about the eggs inside.
Okay?
That's the whole, that's the chidush. That's why it has to say it. Right? If it laid eggs in the nest, there wouldn't be a question.
Yeah.
That's why it's saying, in halacha, there's a whole question, there's a whole discussion. Psachet chulin. The Rishonim talk about when is an egg considered basar? When is it considered part of the animal? When is it not? Let's say you do shechita on a chicken. You see unformed eggs. Is it just a very, very early stage? Right, very, very early stage. So it's still considered meat at a certain point. Then at a certain point, it's, let's say you found full eggs in there.
If you follow this rule, then a person, if they use the shechita, there's a baby cow inside, you have to do shechita on that one also. Follow this rule. If you say it's a different part of entity,
right?
And you follow this.
Well, the thing is,
because in Shechita, if you slaughter the animal,
it counts for the baby also.
Inside,
it's considered, yeah, right? Yerech imo. It's considered part of the animal.
It's not even a baby yet. It's like a piece of meat.
No, but in the embryo case,
it's comparing two things together.
Right. I hear what you're saying. You're saying normally we have a concept. It's a very good question. Normally we have a concept of what's called ben pikua, which it means that when you slaughter an animal, the shechita counts for whatever's inside. That is true. So even if it has a baby inside and the baby comes out and starts walking around,
just eat it.
Midra banan, we require shechita, but really, d'oraita, you don't require it. So you could just eat it without, you could kill it some other way and eat it. That is true. So normally the shechita goes to, but I guess that's the whole point. The idea here is that even though that's true, even though shechita might count for it because it's considered part of the animal in a certain way, it's not considered the essence of the korban. It's not part of the korban really. It just happens to be inside there, but it's not part of the korban because when you offer the korban, you're really offering the mom. You're not offering the baby. It just happens to be the baby's inside, right? So that's why it's a chidush, because you might think like exactly what you're saying. Now, if you want to eat the eggs, no. So then it says halav amukdashin. What if you have milk that comes out from the amukdashin? This is a further thing, that even if you did pigul on the animal, okay? In other words, you ended up saying, I'm going to eat the meat of this animal after the required time. And then some milk was taken out of the animal, and they said, would you like some chalav Yisrael?
After 3 days.
Right. Even before. But the animal's pigul, because you said, if you said, I'm going to drink the milk of this thing after 3 days, that wouldn't be pigul, because you're not talking about the main animal. But even if you said about the animal itself, I'm going to eat it in 3 days,
you made it pigul,
but the guy says, before it dies, I just want to squeeze some of the milk out of here, have some milk, it's not pigul. The milk doesn't become pigul. Okay, that's the chidush. Now, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar says, pigel bazevach. Here's the logic of it, okay? I'm going to give you the logic of it. Anything you do that invalidates the main thing, so anything which is secondary to it is also going to be invalidated. But if your intention relates to the secondary thing, that will not affect the main thing. Okay, so now keeping that in mind, it works like this. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, pigel bazevach. If the person had the bad intention with respect to the korban, nitpagel ashlil. So then even if that korban has inside it a baby, like you said, it is considered part of the korban for that respect. It will be. So if you said, I'm going to eat this animal in 3 days from now instead of 2 days, right? And then they did the shechita, so now it's pigul. So now when you open it up, you say, but the baby inside, maybe that's not pigul. Let's take the baby out. No, so the embryo, it's not a fully formed baby. The embryo in there, it will be pigul because it's part of the meat of the animal. So, however,
what
Mishnah says is the next case. Bishlil, if your kavana was, I'm only going to eat the embryo afterwards, then lo nitpagel azevach, because it's not in and of itself. In other words, it doesn't have an independent identity. So you can't have a kavanah just for that part of the animal and think that that kavanah is going to spread to the entire animal. It doesn't work like that. But if you had a kavanah for the main animal, that spreads to anything inside. Similarly, pigil ba'alal, if you had intention, I'm going to eat the neck bone, okay? So this is talking now not about an animal, because an animal, we said already in alal, the neck bone is not edible, but it's talking about a bird's neck, okay? Some people like to eat the neck bone. So it says, nitpaglamoa'a. Then even the zefek, even the what's called the crop of the animal, of the bird, which is like a little sac here in the throat that collects like it's when it digests, whatever. So that will become also pigul, but bimoa'a. If you said, all I want to eat is the zefek in 3 days or in 2 days, I don't want to eat the rest of it, that lo nitpagel alal, that won't affect it. Won't affect the meat of the animal. Meaning to say, that if you have kavanah for some part of it, which is secondary, that secondary part doesn't affect the whole. That's not going to affect the whole because you're having intention for something that's not normally eaten. That's not normally eaten as part of the sacrifice. So it doesn't affect the sacrifice. But if you had intention for the sacrifice, then anything attached to it comes in. Similarly, pigil be'moin, nitpaglu be'parim, lo nitpaglu emoin. This is talking specifically about the sacrifices of Yom Kippur. On the sacrifice of Yom Kippur, the parim and the sofim, the burnt parim. What happens with that? So on Yom Kippur, when the Kohen would do the service, so he would put the blood in the proper places, and then he would take emurin, he would take the innards of the animal, and he would put that on the Mizbech. But the parim themselves are not offered on the Mizbech. They're burnt outside the Beit HaMikdash. They're not outside. Burnt in the regular place. If you read what the Torah says, they take it outside. They take it to a place outside. Yeah, on Yom Kippur, they don't burn it on the Mizbeach. That the body of the Korban is burnt outside. So therefore, so like the Seir that goes inside, or the power of the Kohen Gadol goes inside, they burn it outside. So it says, this, so if you had in mind, okay, for the Emurin is the part of the animal that actually does go on the Mizbeach, and you said, I'm going to save it to tomorrow. I'm too tired from fasting. I'm going to do it tomorrow. Right? That will make the entire thing pigul. Now, what's the significance? The significance is that if somebody wants to eat it, which you can't anyway, because it's Yom Kippur and also it's not supposed to be eaten, they would also be chayav karet for eating the pigul. Now, because the thing that was supposed to go on the altar, you had an intention about it. But if you had intention, nitpaglu parim, right? Beparim, lo nitpaglu emuim. If you have thoughts about the bulls themselves, it won't affect the part that goes on the Mizbeach. Why not? Because the bulls themselves are not even offered on the Mizbeach. So what are you having? What are you thinking? They're just burnt.
It's like emorin.
Right. It's not like emorin because emorin goes on the mizbeach. It's actually a service. Right. The parim are like outside. It's like waste. Right. It's like waste. They burn it outside. So what you think about with respect to that is not going to affect the sacrifices because it's outside. It's like taking outside to burn it. They go to a special place. They burn it into ashes. It's not. Nothing happens. So that's not really considered having a bad intention about something that's related to the service. But if you had bad intention about something that does relate to the service, it will affect even those parts that are taken outside. If somebody decided to take a bite out of it on the way out or something like that, it would be pigul, in addition to the fact that it's Yom Kippur.
If they're going to things, you know what, this cow, tomorrow I'm going to bark by myself.
Yeah, I'm going to take it outside, and then I'm going to think that I'm going to let them think I'm burning it, but secretly I'm going to keep it for tomorrow. Nice, you know? Right, so then what will happen? It won't affect it, because actually what he's thinking of doing is not part of the service anyway. Because there's no eating of those, and there's not even any burning on the altar of those. They're just burnt outside. Very interesting. So
it doesn't have Kiddushah.
It does have Kiddushah, but that's the way that they dispose of it. That's the mitzvah. That's the mitzvah of it.
I think they didn't want to make too much barbecue taste on Yom Kippur. People
smell it. It smells too good. They're going to get too hungry. That way it smells worse. It's just a burning smell. So people will say, it could be. Hashem has a lot of mercy for us. So he did that. It's like somebody said the other day, I read somebody said something funny. They said, you know, Hashem's name comes to Gematria 26, so people always give 26 thousand. He said, you see how merciful Hashem is. Imagine if his name Gematria was $1,000. Everything would be it would be so expensive, and we'd be bankrupt. You know? See, that's true. So maybe you're right. Yeah. Anyway, so now it says what? Okay. So the Gemara says, Lema misayele v'shavim sh'im chishev v'achilat parim v'sreif v'atan lo asav lo klom. It says that if you thought something wrong about the eating of those bulls that are not supposed to be eaten anyway, or the burning of them, which is not really considered part of the service. It's like a disposal process, that lo asa velo klum. It doesn't affect the korbanot at all. Now, this is when it says v'shavim, is because there's a machloket between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim in general. If there's any concept of pigul for chataot, that the blood goes inside the kodesh, right? For the chataot of Yom Kippur, or the chataot, the few cases of chatat, that the blood goes inside the kodesh area, if there's even a concept of pigul, or it's only things on the outer altar have a concept of pigul. But they both agree that there's no pigul if you're thinking about something which isn't part of the service at all, like eating these bowls, or like burning them the wrong day, or eating them the wrong day. There is no eating of them. And the burning of them, there is no burning of them except the disposal process, which is not even considered a service. So that wouldn't be a pigul. So my love, ha chishev ba'imurim nitpaglu parim. So doesn't that support what we're saying here? What we're saying here is that if you had the wrong thought about putting the part that does go on the altar, which is those inner organs, that it will make the korban pigul. So it's supporting what we just said, that it will make it pigul if you think something wrong about the part that goes on the mizbeach. It says, lo, not necessarily. Ha chishev be'emorin, nitpaglu emorin atzman. Maybe if you think about something wrong with respect to the thing that goes on the altar, the only thing it ruins is the thing that goes on the altar. It's not going to ruin anything else. Maybe those parim can't really become pigul because they're not eaten anyway and they're not burned on the mizbeach anyway. So maybe there's no concept of pigul by them at all. Okay? Maybe it's only with respect to the part that goes on the altar. Then the Gemara says, Tashima, come and listen to parim nisofim, muslima nisofim. Mo'alin ben mishuk dishu. If you have these bulls and these goats of Yom Kippur, from the minute that you designate them, that you consecrate them, mo'alin behen. That means that if you benefit from them in any way, it's me'ila. It's misappropriating God's property. You're not allowed to do anything with it. Once they're designated, nishchatu, once they're slaughtered, hukshiru lipasel bitvul yom, uvum chusar kippurim, uvlina. Once they're slaughtered, now they can become ruined by somebody tamei touching them, ativul yom, somebody even who went to the mikveh that day, mechusar kippurim, is somebody who was... Who needed to bring some kind of korban before they became fully purified. They finished their period of waiting, but they didn't bring their korban yet to be purified. Or lina, if they leave it overnight. In other words, once you start the service, it becomes more vulnerable. It becomes even more sensitive to being ruined once you do the slaughtering. So what does it show you? My love, linat bazar. Isn't it saying that if you leave the meat over of one of these korbanot, it becomes invalidated? Like, instead of taking the burnt, the parim out and burning them like you're supposed to, you just left it over, becomes lina. Ushma mina, migod de pasla belina, pasla ba machshava. So, and if you're going to tell me that leaving it over to the next day invalidates the korban, because you were supposed to burn it on Yom Kippur and you left it to the next day because you're so religious you don't want to burn it, whatever. Right? You decide not to do it. So, what happens? So that would imply that if when you were doing the slaughtering you thought you were going to do that, it should also invalidate the korban. So the Gemara says, lo, linat emurin. We're only talking about leaving over the innards of the animal. Forget about the meat of the animal. The meat of those animals doesn't ever go on the altar. It's not part of any service. It's just burnt. We don't have to think about it at all. Hamidekatani sefa. But what about the end of that braita? It says, kulan mo'alin be'en al betadeshin. It says that as long as you haven't fully burnt the meat of those sacrifices, anyone who benefits from it in any way is still committing a sacrilege of misappropriating that meat. So what is it talking about? So it says, just like in the beginning, linat basar, we're talking about, michlal dereisha linat basar, we're talking about what? The leaving over of the meat. We're talking about the meat. We're not talking about the innards of the sacrifice. The whole question here is, since in these burnt offerings of Yom Kippur, the only thing that goes on the altar is the inner organs, maybe that's the only thing that we care about, if you have a wrong intention about that part. But if you have a wrong intention about the meat of the korban, since the meat of those offerings nothing is done with them, they're just burnt, maybe it's irrelevant. So it says, no, meat the area, what do you mean? Hakidita vakidita. The beginning, when it talks about leaving things over past the time, or having intention of leaving it over past the time, that's talking about the part that goes on the altar. And when it's talking about sacrilege, you're still not allowed to benefit from the meat of the korban, that's for sure. So then, motiv rabba ve'elu she'en mifaglin ve'en mitpagelin. We have the following brayta, Rabba says. Here are things that don't cause pigul and don't become pigul. In other words, if you think about one of these things, about delaying the benefit from one of these things past the time, or delaying the eating of it past the time.
Rabbi,
yeah.
I want to invite everybody for Brit.
His grandson, Brit. Yeah, yeah. Yes,
it starts quarter till nine.
Mazal tov.
Thank you, Mazal tov.
If you make time, it would be great.
Everyone who could come. Yeah, so ve'ilu she'en mepagnim tzemer shebarashek vasim v'se'er shebezakan tiyashim, the hair on the head of a sheep. We're talking about the sacrificial sheep. V'se'er shebezakan tiyashim, the goat has a beard, you know? He looks like a rabbi. He has a beard.
Yeah, so I
have a goat. Yeah. So and you have the skin, ve'otev, and again the broth, abgush, that's made with the meat, right? V'akipah, the spices, v'alal, the neck, v'amo'ah, the zefik, the crop of the bird, vatzamot, vagidin, vakanaim, vatlafayim. You have the bones and the sinews and the horns and the hooves, vashlil and the embryo inside, vashilia, the placenta, vachalav mukdashin and the milk, right? Ubeitzetorin or the eggs inside, kulan lo mifaglin velo mitpagilin. Okay, what does it mean? It means that if I thought about eating one of these things, I'm going to eat the hair of the goat. That's weird, but that's what he thought. I'm going to eat it past the time, or I'm going to burn it on the Mizbeach past the time. Okay, in the case of the hair, it wasn't eating, it was burning, because it would put the head on the Mizbeach. So he thinks, I'm going to burn it past the time, or I'm going to eat one of these items that's part of the body of the animal past the time. Okay, it doesn't make the animal pigul, and even if the entire animal becomes pigul, meaning even if you had in mind to eat the meat after the requisite time, it will make even these, it will not make the rest of it pigul. It won't make the bones pigul. It won't make any of the other things pigul. They won't be affected. Now that seems to contradict our Mishnah, right? Because our Mishnah said, or Rabbi Elazar actually, because Rabbi Elazar said that if you have wrong intention with respect to the meat of the animal, every part of the animal comes under the law of pigul.
The innards on top of the altar. That's it. You're done.
Right, you won't be able to finish. So right. It says, "Ve'en chayavin alei mishum pigul notar v'tameh," and all of these items that are not really part of the core animal. So you, for eating them, you wouldn't be liable for pigul, meaning if the wrong intention was thought, or notar if was left over time, past the deadline, past the expiration, v'tameh, or if a tameh person ate it. Okay, ve'amalemen b'chutz patur. And if you took one of these parts of the animal that is not one of the core parts, and you burnt it outside the Beit HaMikdash, it wouldn't be considered offering a korban outside the Beit HaMikdash because it's not part of the korban. So the problem is like this: my love, lo mifagilin azevach, velo mitpagilin mechamat zevach. Doesn't it mean, just like if I thought I'm going to eat the bones of this animal in 3 days from now, it doesn't make the whole korban into pigul because I was thinking about a part of it that's not part of the core animal. So too, if I thought I'm going to eat the meat of this korban in 3 days from now, it won't make the bones pigul. That's what it says. Lo mifagelin velo mitpagelin. So even if the korban actually became pigul, if I took a bone out of there and I washed it off, I could eat it. Not pigul. So the Gemara says, lo mifagelin et azevach. It's true that if you have intent only about the bones, it doesn't affect the korban. Velo mitpagelin mechamat atzman. What it means is, even if I thought to myself, I'm only going to have the bones in 3 days, not only does it not affect the whole animal, it doesn't even affect the bones. That's what it's trying to say. Lo mifagelin v'lo mitpagelin. It doesn't even affect the bones. Yachi, if that's true, ha dekatani sefa, what it says at the end, kulan lo mifagelin v'lo mitpagelin atu lamali. Why does it again repeat that sentence? That it doesn't cause pigul, and it's not subject to pigul. And furthermore, but according to you, so doesn't that seem to imply that it's saying that even if the whole animal became pigul, the bones would not become pigul? So it says, according to you, en chayavin alav mishum pigul ha tu lamali. It repeats it actually three times, because then it again says you're not liable because of pigul notar v'tameh. Says it three times. Ela aydi debay lemitna notar v'tameh itar pigul hachanami aydi debay lemitnei hamalev mehen b'chutz. The reason why it mentions it two and three times is because each time it's adding another halacha that it had to mention, and since it had to mention those other halachot, either about that they're not subject to the rule of offering them outside the Beit HaMikdash, or when it wanted to mention the rule about notar v'tameh, it mentions the pigul aspect again. But really, if I sacrifice the korban, and at the time I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to eat only the bones after 3 days. Not only will that not make the korban pigul, but it won't even make the bones pigul. If I think that I'm going to eat the korban meat after 3 days, that will make even the bones pigul, like we learned before. We ourselves already learned it. Because we said, somebody slaughters a korban with intent to eat the shlil or shilya, the embryo or the placenta outside, lo pigel. It's no problem. Because we're talking about eating the eggs of the bird korban, it doesn't create pigul. Right? But then we said, chaleva muktashin ubetze toim. Then we said afterwards, when it reiterated it, it said, the eggs of the bird korban and the milk of the korban, you're not chayav because of pigul. Meaning, even if you said this animal I'm going to eat in 3 days from now, so the animal actually did become pigul. You didn't say I'm going to eat the eggs from 3 days from now because that won't affect the korban. And you didn't say I'm going to drink the milk in 3 days from now. That won't make the animal become pigul. But if you said I'm going to eat the meat in 3 days from now, so the animal's pigul, still its milk and its eggs don't become pigul. But it only mentions milk and eggs, implying what? It says en chayavin. It says that beitzetoim en chayav alein mishum pigul notav etameh hashelil v'shelia chayavim. The implication of the second part is that for the embryo and the placenta, you are liable. Ela lav shema mina kan mechamat azevach kan mechamat atzman shema mina. So the answer is that, in other words, in the first half, when it talks about kavana to create pigul, it says if your kavana is to eat the eggs or to drink the milk or to eat the embryo or to eat the placenta after the proper time,
Sure. None
of those will create pigul. But when it talks about an animal that became pigul because you thought I'm going to eat the meat after 3 days, It's telling you still the milk and the eggs are not affected, but the shilya, the placenta, the embryo, they will be affected. So too, we see the same distinction. In other words, there are some things that are totally outside of pigul. If your kavana is about them, it won't make the animal pigul. And even if your kavana was a pigul intention, that the korban became pigul, these items won't become pigul. For example, the milk, the eggs, okay? Then there are some things that if your kavana is about them, it won't make the animal pigul. Such as the bones, the horns, right. the hooves, the abgush, all of these things,
or the embryo,
the placenta, all of these things you have in mind about them, it doesn't affect the korban. But if you had in mind to make the korban pigul, you said I'm going to eat the meat of this korban after 3 days, so the whole thing became pigul. Now even the bones and the embryo and the hooves and all of that will also become pigul. So there's two different things. There are things that are secondary to the animal, and therefore they can't make it pigul, but they can become pigul. And there are things that are considered separate from the animal, essentially, like the eggs and the milk, that even when the animal becomes pigul, it doesn't filter down to these items.
How is the eggs?